episode 337 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moore, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So, M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. Happy belated 4th.
Yes. Yeah. Did you have a good one?
It was muted. It was. We didn't do very much. And there really weren't that many fireworks around the. Our neighborhood usually has people drive down to South Carolina and buy illegal fireworks and bring them back up here and shoot them off in the neighborhoods. And it was just nobody really did that. We were kind of dreading it. My daughter doesn't like fireworks, so she was dreading it. And it just, we went out to dinner and we went bowling and then came home and that was it. It was just not much to it. Strange.
I saw a drag queen.
You saw Gottmik, right?
Well, I saw two drag queens. I saw Gottmik on Friday the 3rd.
Second.
And then Rosé was there on Sunday. So one of my friends who is from Indiana, he was just like, he's like, you know, remember when you were young and idealistic and you were like, I just want to drive to a new place because I have a long weekend. He was just like, he's like an Instagram friend that I have. And he was just like, hey, I've been trying to visit cities that I've never been to before. Do you mind if I come to Columbus? I was like, okay. So we went to go see Rosé. I realized I never posted any pictures about it.
Was that a patriotic drag show?
No. I can't even think of a smart-ass answer. No.
Okay. Excellent. What'd you do, Megan?
So I threw a party, and I realized I was in over my head because the last party I threw, I just ordered pizza, but this one I'm like, I'll grill. And I bought this mini grill that could fit like maybe two burgers and three hot dogs on it at a time. And I'm like, oh, it'll like, he'll heat it up fast. But my mom came to help me in the beginning and she ended up cooking. And I'm like, Mom, don't ever leave me. You're my savior. And she was like, oh, I didn't do that much. I'm like, I don't know what I would have done. Like, she's like, I kept thinking, you're not prepared for this. You don't understand. And I didn't, but now I do. It's hard whenever you're by yourself and like, you know, you don't, I don't know. And also because I don't eat a lot, I don't know how to judge what people eat. And, yeah, it was interesting. It was fun. It was a great time. It was an awesome time. And my mom like basically helped me save the day. Oh, well, she saved the day and, she helped me out and, it was a good time. Lots of fireworks. My dog was scared. It was his first 4th with me and he was really scared. Aww. I felt bad. You know?
Yeah. I see those things on Twitter all the time about, how that's like a national day of terror for animals.
Yeah. He's looking at me right now.
It's like, you're talking about me, bitch.
He's like, are you making fun of me? Yeah. Bitch. So I don't like fireworks. Don't tell the world.
I thought that was between us. God, yeah. I don't tell you anything.
Well, we hope all of our listeners enjoyed their holiday weekend, and hopefully most everybody that was listening was off on Monday.
Lot of people weren't, which is weird.
We were.
They should be. Yeah, I was too. They should be. People should be off. If the 4th of July falls on a Sunday or a Saturday, you should get either the day before or the like day after off.
Agreed.
Or something, you know, something.
And next year we'll get Juneteenth off.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's a national holiday now.
So wait, does that mean everybody gets it off? Here's the thing. Are they going to take away one of our days off that we accumulate?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know
what they're going to do. I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's what will probably happen.
I think they're going to be like, oh, we're going to take this off. Like, they're going to, like, I don't know.
And then it'll just cause more racism within the country because white people will be like, what are you mine?
Well, hopefully they don't take away like Martin Luther King Day or something like that. That would be awful.
Oh, I don't have that off anyway. So maybe I won't have Juneteenth off.
Oh, no, it is a national holiday. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I guess we'll find out next year.
Yeah, interesting.
So this week, for those of you who were listening to our podcast last week, we talked about the sequence of events for the next couple of weeks, as we do have the Emmy nominations coming out next week. And on this podcast, we were supposed to give our Emmy predictions. We weren't quite ready for that, even though we did have a long weekend. Some of us just didn't get it. No. I am not ready for that.
Me too.
Oh, you weren't either? Okay, none of us
were ready. Let's just say.
I actually think it's kind of crazy because the season, you know, the season's like kind of getting back to normal, but it's also just like I was thinking about some stuff and I was looking, you know, the categories are however many nominees in each category. And at some time when I was started doing my predictions after we had the conversation that we might have been doing our predictions, I looked at the categories. I was like, I don't fucking know. Like, I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck to put in here. I just don't know. So I'm glad we have another couple of days because, yeah.
Well, you know, comedy series, drama series, they both have 8 nominees. Drama series is probably a little bit easier to fill, but comedy series, I mean, we only have like, I would argue 3 or 4, and then 4 more that are coming from somewhere. No idea where.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of like weird, quirky shit that pops in the comedy series, and I hope it's nuts.
Yeah, so we are going to publish those with the rest of Team ADTV on the website on Friday. So this Friday, July the 9th, look for that at awardsdaily.com/ADTV. And then we will not have another podcast until Tuesday night, the night of the Emmy nominations, where we will join as a full group and hash through our reactions from the nominations and how inevitably crazy they will be, because it's very hard to predict the unpredictable.
Yeah.
And then we're going to stick with our halfway best of halfway podcast on the following weekend, just a little bit late. So this week, what we're talking about is our reactions to FX's Dave season 2, which started a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago. It's about halfway through its second season. And this is a show that was one of our very favorites from 2020. And we're going to talk about our reactions to season 2 and whether or not it successfully surpasses the sophomore slump. That was a lot of S's inadvertently. And of course, we'll wrap things with the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. So, Megan, sorry to put you on the spot, but Dave has been long one of your favorite shows. I think you turned that us on to it first. You want to talk about Dave season 2?
Sure. So Dave season 2 picks up with it picks up with him in Japan, right? No, Korea.
Korea.
Because I'm thinking of the song. I took a dump in Korea or something? I forget what it was. But it picks up, which we kind of don't get, you know, there's a jump between, I think it ends with him, like, kind of having that moment on the radio. But now he's kind of a star, but he's going to make his first album. But is he making his first album? And that's what the first episode is kind of like. He doesn't have any ideas. He's kind of going through a writer's block is what it insinuates. And this season is a little bit different, I think, than the first season, in that he is now a name instead of somebody trying to grow, even though he's still trying to, you know, he's not like elite level status or anything, but he's more of a celebrity now than he was in the first season. But I think this second season, I still find it funny. But it's taking a little bit longer to, I don't want to say this like sounds mean, but like to make its point. Like, I'm not quite sure yet from the episodes I've seen what it's trying to say, but I'm still really into it. But I wanted to find out what you guys thought.
I still like it. It's entertaining. He's a very charismatic and entertaining individual. And,
he is, yeah.
I've only seen 4 episodes. Of the 4 episodes that I've seen so far, it is very aimless. And he is aimless in the show, so I can kind of see what they're going with. It does look like there's going to be... how many episodes are in the second season? 10?
10.
10, yeah. 8.
8.
Wikipedia is showing 8. I assume there's going to be 10, though. Because
yeah, I would think. Yeah.
Anyway, he's aimless, so the show is kind of aimless. But it doesn't know where to focus, I think. And I think that's my problem, my issue with what I've seen so far. It's kind of all over the place. And mm-hmm. it's fine to have a character that's aimless, but I would not advise to have a show that's aimless. You still need to have a point to it.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's still often very funny. It's just not as good as season one. I think season one, you know, having him be the underdog, having him try to break out and make it. I mean, that's just such an attractive trope anyway. Mm-hmm. This doesn't necessarily have that yet. You did say that episode 5 got better. I haven't gotten to that point yet, but that's been sort of my reaction. I do want to talk about in detail the third episode, but before we do that, let's jump over to Joey.
I still really enjoy it. I want more Gaeta. I think he's just,
yes.
I love him. We start to get more of him in episode 4. I wasn't sure if I was like turned off by the first episode or it was just really jarring. But I think maybe because we have seen him with this sort of underdog status and then this first episode where I think it's so absurd. Like, I think a lot of what this show does is sort of it takes like really absurd qualities but like makes it kind of real. Like, I don't know how it does that necessarily, but it does it really well. I can't really pinpoint it. He's kind of an asshole in the first episode. Not that he can't be an asshole, but I was just a little like, oh, I didn't know that this is where the jumping off point was going to be. We do have to talk about that third episode because I was laughing my ass off the entire time. But I will say something that I love about the show that is still there in so far this season is he's always talking about how he's like trying to be authentic. And I feel like he is, if at least not, he's one of the most like honest characters I feel like I've seen in a very long time. Like, he like fakes stuff and it comes out of his mouth just because he is the type of guy who just wants to be like super honest and real with everybody. And that's what I think is really funny. Like, if he, I don't know, like in the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar episode where he's talking about, I was like, I don't know if that's racist. I'm trying to say, he's like, I know I wrote that song a year and a half ago, but I know I'm much more aware of racism or something like that. I don't know. There's something like very lovable about how there's no like artifice to him almost, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I like that. I think that does make sense. He is really an honest character.
Yeah. I don't know.
He is, but there's just, I don't know. I think it's such a small thing, but one of the things that I really didn't like was they're starting to include like these weird celebrity cameos, not just to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, yeah. because that kind of makes sense, but like he goes into a pool with Kendall Jenner at one point.
Right.
And I'm
I
like,
I thought that was her. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just not funny.
And she doesn't belong on this show.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Although he did have Courtney, I guess, in the first season. At that house party.
Oh right, I forgot about that.
But that seemed to flow more organically because it was a house party where celebrities would be, and Justin Bieber was there, so it kind of made sense.
Yeah.
But here he's just hanging out at a pool with this guy, and she's there, and you know, it just, I don't know, it's just off. The whole thing just feels askew.
Yeah, I do think it's different. Like, I love watching these characters, but I also feel like they're all kind of discombobulated right now. Like, Andrew, Santino? Oh, no, wait, what is his name? Let me go back to the redheaded.
Mike,
yeah, who's Andrew Santino in real life. He's great. He's kind of got his own thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what he's dealing with, which it's really interesting in the Bar Mitzvah episode, which airs this week. But and then Gaeta's kind of got his thing where you kind of sense that he wants to maybe break away from. Is that what you guys are sensing, too, that he maybe wants to break away from or like do his own thing a little bit? Because he does have his own like stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a natural trajectory, but you know, does that help the health of the overall series? The right. The side gig for Mike with the two little TikTok kids, they're not funny. That's DOA. Like his best part is in that episode 3, The Observer. But I do not like the at the beginning of episode 4, he's sitting down at a restaurant and the TikTok guys come in and they're like, we're shutting this place down because we found out that it's, you know, they're serving horse meat or whatever. And it just doesn't land. It doesn't do anything.
Although I thought that it brought out something in Gaeta. Well, was that a dream though? Was that a dream that he had?
No, that was real.
That was real. I couldn't remember that. When the guys did that to him or like they, the two guys like pranked him.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I thought that was, I don't know why I thought that was a dream. Maybe I've been watching too many shows. But I thought that was like, there are little moments where I think what I like about the show is that it shows like the superficialness of stardom and then brings out like, you know, humanity in it. And that Gaeta moment I thought was really, Gaeta has all the best moments. And that's the other thing that I think is dangerous for this show is that Gaeta is so close to just stealing the. I mean, maybe he is stealing the whole series from its lead.
Yeah, he is great, and I want more of him honestly because I want him to deliver on the promise of his brilliant season 1 episode where they explore his bipolar disorder.
He has arc in the Bar Mitzvah episode.
Okay.
But what's kind of, it's also like, I think the other thing is that so much of what I liked about the first season was that they were all kind of playing off each other. And right now they're all like, it's separated. Mike. Yeah, they're all separated. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably a part of the problem. And also because Dave is, you know, kind of having an outs with Els. So.
You know, that's a mistake that a lot of shows make in their second season, particularly when they work off of an ensemble. And then for whatever reason, second season, they decide that each character needs their own little arc and they don't necessarily integrate with each other. I remember, Joe, you'll probably disagree with me on this, but I remember. Yes, Desperate Housewives season 2.
I knew
2
you were going
to
bring that up.
Yeah, that's probably one of my best examples of it, that they just, you know, that first season was so brilliant because of the chemistry between the actresses, but then they did, they went off and did their own thing. They didn't have like a conjoined plot to keep them going, outside of, you know, Alfre Woodard and her son in the basement, but, it suffered, I think, because of that.
That's interesting. Cause then I'm thinking of Friends, how they never invited anybody else in or introduced. And that's maybe why the show succeeded. Because they were so like, it's about these six people and that's it.
Yep.
I agree. Like I sort of the breaking of them apart, like when you see there's like that conversation in episode, I think 3, when it's Mike's birthday and Dave calls him like near the end of the night and you can tell that neither of them are like feeling it. They're just like doing it as a formality. And I was like, I feel like this is something from like a season 4. And you can tell me what the sort of strain is there in their friendship, which I get it because it's part of the plot of the episode, but it's also just like, I don't think we're there yet. Like, I don't know. It just feels like a little soon for something like that. It feels like maybe that part, like, sort of felt like it was jumping the gun to me. I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does.
So let's talk about episode 3, which has been the big buzz water cooler moment of the season so far. Who wants to cue it up?
Joey, I think you should.
So I will say I've been waiting for this episode because Megan has been talking about it very cryptically. she was saying that she wasn't sure how people were going to react to it, and that it's incredibly homoerotic. And so every time something veered slightly towards sex, I was like, is this it? I wasn't sure what episode it was on. So the opening of the episode, which is titled The Observer, it's sort of, it's gay. It's like, so it's basically Dave and Benny Blanco are like getting high a lot, and they're doing a lot of stuff that
instead of a lot writing of, music really
instead of writing music, like they get high and they hang out in the pool naked, and they like there's a whole sequence of Dave is shoves a wad of bubble gum up Benny's ass to see if he farts it'll blow a bubble, and then like Gata and Tone come over and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? And it's sort of like this gleefully unhinged, absurd montage where I was really taken aback by, I was like, oh my God, like even the most comfortable straight men would not do that, let alone do it on camera. They're frolicking and very comfortable, like chasing each other naked and rolling around naked,
and then simulating sex with simulating sex in bed. I also thought it was, I think this is even beyond, like what I saw was not even something I could see two gay men doing together, to be honest.
Men at that point would be like, all right, let's get to the point.
Like it was beyond anything. I wanted them to push on it more. I wanted them to like talk about it more, because I felt like they were kind of saying how, you know how people always say that, well, women's friendships are different than men's friendships. Like women would be more likely to kiss, or like, you know, women, I mean, this is maybe also what men imagine, but like that closeness. And I feel like this was really interesting to see two straight, quote unquote, straight men, acting close. And but I mean, close, not that girls act like this all the, like straight women act like this all the time. But I just thought it was a really interesting conversation with surrounding, especially when Gata and Tone came in too and said that black guys don't do this.
Well, I mean, you
they don't have bromances.
What did he say when he was like, so what would happen if you got home and everyone in your family was tied up and they each had a gun to their head and like tied up, like, and your mom was just like, with a gag in her mouth, and if they said, like, everyone in your family is going to die unless you suck your friend's dick, what would you do? And they'd be like, I'll see you in heaven, guys.
That's a good one. I love it. I'll see you in heaven.
And it was so quick. It was so, I was like, all right.
I feel like Benny Blanco, as she portrayed in that episode, is probably gay.
Yes.
And I feel like the way that I interpreted what Dave was doing was, he's acting like a kid and he's found somebody where he can, another guy where he can show off his hypospadias condition without feeling ashamed, and they're celebrating that, and all of a sudden they get high and it just deteriorates after that into this weird homoerotic, I guess is the right word, but it's stronger than that for sure, episode. But I do feel like Benny Blanco is probably gay.
Well, especially with like the ending, doesn't he say like, oh, we shouldn't be working together anymore, kind of like, isn't that how that episode ends, where he's like, oh, Benny's not going to work with you anymore?
Well, that's when he said he's doing something with Ed here.
Yeah, he's like doing something else with somebody else. So it was almost like maybe he felt weird or something.
Yeah. A breakup.
Yeah. I also think that Dave just is like a curious guy. Like he like wants to see how far he can push things. He's very like inquisitive and smart and like no boundaries with him. And also he's going through this breakup with Allie. So he's probably yearning for some sort of closeness and understanding. And somehow he found it with Benny.
Yeah. And Allie does not feature very prominently in this. She does show up in episode 3, and she has an open sore on her back, which he then vomits in.
Yes.
I mean, like, come on. She's in episode 4 too. I don't know if she's in 5, but I'm not real. I mean, I like, she's a very, that the actress who plays Allie, Taylor Misiak, she's a very appealing actress. I like her quite a bit.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I just, you know, either write her off or, you know, make her stronger than just, you know, somebody he throws up on.
Yeah. She has that great moment in the, is it the season finale or this penultimate episode in this first season at the wedding? I thought that she was so good in that episode.
Yeah. I want a spinoff series starring Christine Coe as Emma. She is fantastic. I just love how dry she is.
She is funny, and she hasn't had as much to do this season either. I feel like we learned more from her in the first season.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But I will say the fifth episode, Bar Mitzvah, is more of what I felt like. It's more of a season one type of episode. Just to cue it up, is that like Mike gets him a gig because they're kind of needing money. He gets him a gig doing a bar, like showing up at a bar mitzvah, like to a wealthy family. And like all he has to do, I think he has to maybe sing or something. And yeah, like in the contract, it's like you have 20 minutes of mingling. It's like something like that. But so he has to do this. And also Els is kind of working with him and there's friction there. And then Mike is also like enamored with the father at the house. It's really, it's good. And it kind of all congeals together with Gaeta toward the end. But I think it's probably my favorite episode of the season.
And I think I see why. Dave Byrd actually wrote that one. And he has not written any episodes in season 2 up until the 5th episode.
That's wild.
Yeah, and he wrote 4 in the first season.
He's just a really talented guy. I'm kind of shocked by how funny he is and how he's a good rapper. He's a good writer. He's just kind of, he's surprising to me. He's a very talented person.
Anything else we want to say about Dave season 2?
No, but watch this new episode.
Comes I out do think day. That Dave, I think on its like worst day is still better than a lot of other stuff.
I agree. It's kind of like you mentioned this. Like, I know I wasn't a fan of Lovecraft Country, but Lovecraft Country at least took swings. And I think this is a show in the comedic realm that takes swings. And you got to at least respect that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Actually, that is something that we haven't touched on. If we want to touch on very quickly.
I do want to touch upon that. Like,
so it's funny because Megan was doing not a rewatch, but a first time watch, a catch up, I should say, of Lovecraft Country. And the day after, I think you were debating whether or not to finish it.
I did finish it, but I don't remember what happened in the last episode.
I don't either. Honest, it's very odd. It's not a great finale. But HBO then decided to cancel it. They did have The Class, unlike NBC and Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. They did have The Class to cancel it after culmination of the first season. Although I would argue that they could have, if they had canceled it a month ago, they could have promoted it in the limited series category, which I think was what it was originally intended to be, because they were filming a season that follows the narrative of the book. And then they decided they were going to maybe do a second season, and Misha Green had already come up with some designs on the second season. But it is not to be, and I don't know that she's going to shop it anywhere else.
I think they already did try a little bit, didn't they? I thought they did, and it was rejected from other places, too.
I would imagine it's not a cheap show.
No.
Just think about, like, how much money they probably have to do, with every set piece. Every episode is completely different, almost.
The production design I'm thinking of in, like, some of those episodes.
The production design in that episode that takes place in Korea is fantastic.
Yes, I spoke to
the production designer, and I spoke with her for like an hour because she was incredibly nice to talk to, and she was excited about this project so much. And she actually told me, because I asked her about that episode, that she was just like, no one's been asking me about that episode. I was like, how?
Why?
Are people not? I was like, that's people like are not.
My favorite episode.
I don't know if people are just talking about like the Artem House or like all the, you know, there's a lot of really incredible details in the production design of that show. Like in the department store, if you look at the columns of the department store, the bottom of the columns are black and the top of the columns are white. So even that represents like white people, with their place being on top of the backs of African Americans. Like there's a lot of really exquisite work in just the production design, and also like the costumes are amazing and stuff. So anyway, sorry, go on. I cut someone off.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and Megan, I want to get into your reaction to it because you're the only one on the podcast that hasn't had the opportunity to really kind of opine on what you thought of the first season. But just very quickly, it was successful. I'm kind of surprised that HBO did not extend it. I mean, I guess it's probably for the best. I know, Joey, you had different thoughts, but you know, this first season was seen as successful in a lot of ways. It was included on the AFI top 10 TV program of the year. The ratings were consistently above something like Succession, which is, you know, it's not apples to apples comparison, but the ratings were good. I think one thing that probably concerned HBO was the fact that the guilds nearly completely ignored the series direction, writing. It was in there for Screen Actors Guild, but that was actually a Writers Guild. It was nominated for new series. It was not nominated for an individual episode. It just didn't seem to get any kind of traction anywhere. So I didn't
realize the ratings were that good. I know on Twitter it seemed to be all over the place where people either loved it or hated it. Mm-hmm. It kind of had a Westworld like reaction where
season.
Yes, right. And like, and that's, I would compare it to Westworld in terms of my comprehension of what's going on. And I think that I wonder if they feel like we really bit our like shot ourselves in the foot with Westworld. And maybe they saw this as like, we don't want another Westworld. Because I don't know. I'm not sure, but it reminds me a lot. I just know that on Twitter it was either, I saw somebody tweet that it was the biggest drop in quality from the first episode to the second episode, which I don't know if that's true, but the first episode was more interesting, I'd say, with the setup. And then it kind of just goes off the rails from there.
Right, the second episode is not that good. I think the second
and thirds aren't great.
I like the third. That's the ghost story. I like that one.
Wait, the ghost story? That one's okay. Okay, you're right. The second one is probably the one that I was like, what am I watching?
The second one was where they wrapped up the magic cult storyline. Wrapped it up.
Did they wrap it up though? Because
no, they didn't. But
I guess it was there all. I never really understood that, like, quite what was going on. Like, so Tick, his like great grandmother or something. He has like some white blood in him. Is that what it is? White magic?
She was a slave in their family's house, and I think he is an offspring of the master.
Okay.
That was, is that right, Joey? Yeah, she ran out pregnant.
Yes.
I think that he has that family's blood in his.
That's what I thought.
That's why she needs the creepy blonde girl. That's why she needs him for her spell, is because he's got family blood.
But they don't explain that till like later on in the series, which I think would have been more helpful in the beginning. Just kind of, I literally had no idea what was going on after the second episode. I was like, I'm so confused. And then veers away from it. So then you're like, wait, what am I watching? Why am I watching Jamie Chung? Who's amazing?
She's incredible
episode,
on that show.
That was a great episode. And then I'm like, wait, what? I can't remember what the original idea was.
Just very quickly talking about the ratings, like Westworld is probably a good, Westworld is a similar mythology series. Westworld season one had about an average of 1.75 viewers on the initial viewing, not, you know, repeats on different platforms, but just, you know, on that whatever night it aired. Mm-hmm. And then season two averaged slightly, probably somewhere around the same. It started to trail off, probably like all of us stopped watching after a second episode, two or three. A little bit lower, but maybe 1.5. And then Westworld season three averaged at 0.75, still higher than Lovecraft Country season one.
So really?
Maybe that's, yeah, maybe that's why.
I kind of wondered if it was ratings and then topped with the reaction to the finale wasn't great. I didn't see anybody say, like, Lovecraft nailed it. Like, I didn't see anybody say that.
I sort of really appreciated how huge the swings were. Like, mm-hmm. I know one of you mentioned that before, but it was also just like, I don't know, that it's sort of just like, I think Westworld is just like too much. It's just like jerking itself off already. And I feel like it's just like, isn't it? It's great. But I don't think Lovecraft Country was kind of like that, because I feel like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more meaning and depth to it because of all the references that it has and the history that it invokes. And also, probably the most appealing thing about it was we don't ever see Black people in roles like these. Like, we don't see them, like, when we get to see the Hippolyta episode where she's like in, it's like a sci-fi thing, or she travels back in time to see why am I blanking on her name, the dancer,
Josephine Baker.
Yeah, Josephine Baker. Like, that whole thing was amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, Black people are never traditionally, and that's changed a lot in recent years, but Black people are never really the protagonists or heroes of not just their own stories, but also genre and horror. So I don't know. I sort of, this was a show where I was watching it where I was like, I have no idea where it's going. Do I have any idea what's happening? No, but I sort of was just like, okay. All right.
I can respect that. And I think you're right about it too. Like, I think, everything you just said, you're right.
Plus, you don't see shows frequently that do feature Black characters and Black actors that explore themes of sexuality, homosexuality, you know, all the taboo that goes on in that culture with different sexual persuasions, like this show did. I mean, that my favorite episode, followed closely by the episode set in Korea, is episode 5, Strange Case.
Yes, that's a great
episode.
They should be pushing that. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, and I was surprised because they're not. They're pushing the Gigabobo,
which is a very scary episode. Also, it was directed by Misha Green.
Yes.
Which is the only episode that she has directed.
Oh, okay.
So that's probably why they were pushing
the Strange Case. Even the sound design of that grossed me out. Like,
oh yeah,
the flesh falling on the ground. I'm usually not like squeamish about it, but that made me incredibly, like, to gore and stuff. I'm usually never like, yeah, no, but like that, I was like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, and talking about taking big swings, I mean, you know, I talked to the director Cheryl Gagnier, and she had to, you know, she worked with the actress. So in that episode, Ruby, played by Wumi Misako, takes some kind of potion where she gets to live life as a white woman for a while. And the actress who plays Ruby as a white woman had to learn her mannerisms so that it didn't look like a totally different person playing that character. That it, you know, it just, there's lots of little subtleties to that episode that I really loved.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
But not everything was like that. I appreciate, again, I appreciate the big swings that it took. It did not always land, even for me. That Hippolyta episode, very confusing to me. I'm really not sure what happened there.
But
well, I think if you watch the first episode of the series, you're thinking it's going to be this family adventure, like that's finding his father, you know, like that's what it sets it up to be. His dad's found in like what, the second episode? Like, I thought it would be a little bit more down the line. And also Courtney B. Vance is like out of there rather quickly, which is crazy to me. Cause it's Courtney B. Vance, but I guess he had to haul it to Aretha, but I was just shocked by that too. And I think if you look at the first episode and the last episode with everybody was making fun of that scene in the car where all of them are like listening to like sunshine lollipops and or like something like that. They're all in the car. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Like I saw mm-hmm. people saying like, this is how it ends. Like, or like that's towards the end, but it's a weird scene. Like,
it is a weird scene, but my guess is that it still makes it into drama series because there have to be 8 nominees and there's just not a lot of competition for it. Maybe I'm damning it with faint praise. I don't mean to, but I do think a lot of people will appreciate the craft and the big swings that they take.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's at the top of that list, but it's 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody's going to, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I don't think anybody's remembering Perry Mason was a thing. Ratched.
See, I think they will.
You think they will?
Oh, yes, God. I do. I do think they'll remember Perry Mason.
Does that mean we have to watch it?
I don't know. I don't know about that, but I do think they'll remember Perry Mason.
I remember when that show came out and it was all over the posters, like the most beautiful show ever created. I was like, how hard did you come when you wrote that? Like, I want to, like it was all over the posters and I was like, ugh. And then I was a little jealous and I didn't say it first. So.
Stop it.
But it was also just like, all right, I just don't know anyone. I mean, it's just like an old school style show. It has Matthew Reese in it. It does look incredibly well made. I just don't know. I don't know of anyone in the real world who actually either A, knows that it exists or B, watches it. I'm sure there are people that do watch it, but I haven't had a real life conversation with someone who watches it. I think Shadon might watch it or David might watch it.
I think David did. It got uniformly better ratings than Lovecraft Country.
Averaged. I didn't know that. See, I'm wrong.
So maybe I've got to take another look at that. Ugh, I don't know. The reviews weren't very good.
See, I thought the reviews were good.
I think they were fine. I don't think they were great.
I'm
just trying. I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes 77, which I think is pretty low for TV these days. Metacritic was a 67.
But if it's not, I don't know. I just don't know. Like, am I blanking totally on? What was it? Something about a Netflix show? What were you saying? Someone say something about a Netflix show. Am I making that up?
Ratched.
I didn't say. Oh, Ratched.
Oh, Ratched.
That's what I'm struggling with over the next 3 days until we commit our predictions to paper is who takes those 5, 6, 7, 8 slots. Well, 6, 7, 8, because we know Pose is in there too. So,
if you think of HBO Max, doesn't really have any drama series contenders. If we're just looking at HBO getting in for stuff, I guess for drama series, its biggest contenders are Perry Mason, Lovecraft Country, and In Treatment. It's not going to be Euphoria. It's not going to be His Dark Materials. I don't think enough people are watching Industry yet. It's not going to be The Nevers, and it's not going to be Warrior or We Are Who We Are. So maybe Perry. What if Perry Mason gets? Oh God.
Why do I have the theme song stuck in my head?
Well, I will wait until July 13th to determine whether or not I'm going to watch Perry Mason season 1.
Yeah, I shouldn't have watched Lovecraft Country, maybe.
You killed it, Megan. You killed it.
I know.
So that means it's going to get in
there. I'll start watching Perry Mason so I can kill that for you.
The biggest question mark for me is really The Boys. Like,
that's,
I hear a lot of people talking about that show. It's a show I like a lot, obviously, but I just can't see it being nominated for Best Drama. But, I mean, it has Obama cred, so.
I do feel like a lot of people are talking about that show lately. That's one of the shows I'm just like, oh, I need to watch it.
Yep. And season 3 is coming up soon. Anyway, so enough spoiling of our upcoming Emmy predictions, which will again drop on Friday at awardsdaily.com/ADTV. Let's jump to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. So since we're not recording again until Tuesday, I'm going to cheat a little bit. So I want to see, I really loved Fear Street. The first one that came out, I think it's Fear Street 1994. I think it's really conscious of what it's doing. It's really fun. A lot more violent than I thought it was going to be. I wasn't sure if it was going to be like a Goosebumps horror or like actual horror. Yeah, it's actual horror. So the second one drops on Friday, Fear Street 1978. Miracle Workers comes out. Season 3 Oregon Trail drops on Tuesday, the same day as the Emmy nominations. So now I also need to start watching The Boys. And then something else that I think Clarence is going to bring up, so maybe I won't say it now.
Megan?
Everybody should go watch I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, because I think it's hysterical. It's the only show that makes me laugh so hard that I cry. And season 2 is out now. I'll be probably rewatching that over and over again for the next, like, forever. I don't know. I'll watch the whole series over and over again. Also, there was something else that is coming out that I was looking at. Oh, Virgin River, I think, has a new season that's coming out. So I got to catch up with season 2, even though I really do like it. But I fucking hate Jack on the show. And I know everybody's supposed to love him, but I really hate him. But I should finish that. Also, I want to watch this show on HBO Max that Nikki Glaser produces or whatever. That's called Fuckboy Island, where it's like a dating show where they have a bunch of guys, and like a couple of them are fuckboys, and the like people have to figure out which is a fuckboy and which one isn't. So I thought that sounded really interesting. And I do have to watch Ted Lasso. Hopefully. And I'm also interested in the Catch and Kill, the podcast tapes with Ronan Farrow's 6-episode adaptation of his book that's on HBO.
Yeah, I see that too.
And that is, what else? Yeah, that's about it.
Excellent. In the film world, I'm trying to decide when I'm going to, I guess, go back to the movie theater. I would like to see Black Widow on a big screen. I've seen it in a screener on my 55-inch TV, but I would like to see it on a big screen. It's a lot of fun. It is meaningless, but most Marvel movies probably are to most people. But it has a fantastic performance by Florence Pugh. She actually completely steals it away. Yes, pew. Flashback from our own podcast. She completely steals it from Scarlett Johansson. And I'm going to have to watch some old movies that I haven't either seen in a long time or have never seen for a podcast that I'm supposed to be doing with Sasha and Ryan and Mark, dealing something with things they would never make today.
Ooh, what movie can you say?
There have been a lot of things discussed. Clockwork Orange is one of them.
I just watched that last year, and I don't think I'd ever watch it again. It'd be hard to.
Yeah, I've seen it in college, as most people had, and I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen it. So another one was that was bandied about was Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
I've always wanted to see that one.
It's on YouTube.
I've never seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the whole thing is on YouTube because you can't stream it anywhere else. So I've always wanted to see that one. Song of the South was another one.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That one's probably taken away from everything, too.
Yes, well, some of us have bootleg copies.
Oh, got it.
So, but true to form, we can't agree on the titles. I want to do an erotic thriller themed podcast because those have gone away completely. I'm talking about Jade, Basic Instinct, Sliver.
Yeah.
Those are gone. And that was like pop culture staples for a long, long time. They don't make erotic thrillers anymore.
Getting horny at the movies.
Getting horny and murdered.
Yes.
When we end, I have to tell you guys a story.
Okay. So those are the films. TV, the thing that I think Joey was mentioning was a limited series directed by Mike White that's to premiere on HBO this coming weekend, which I could not put down this weekend.
Oh, really?
The White Lotus. Yes. It's so much fun. It is so crazy and moving and thoughtful, and it is written like just a giant novel. I really, really, really liked it a lot. So I'm going to start it over and watch it with my wife. It's just got some crazy stuff going on in there. That's all I'll say. And books-wise, I am finishing The Good Sister, which I highly recommend to you guys and to our listeners. It is written by Sally Hepworth, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
So that's it. Does that cover it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the holiday here. But before we go again, check us out on Friday for the Emmy nomination predictions from the entire team at Awards Daily TV. Check us out next Tuesday night for our group reactions to the Emmy nominations. And check out the site all day long on Emmy nomination day, because I think Joey's going to be very busy updating a post with nominee reactions, I think.
Uh-huh.
So, we are the 3M's contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.